Hello, and welcome to the 10th episode of Let's Talk Iran, providing Iranian-American perspectives on current events and policies that shape U.S.-Iran relations and affect the Iranian-American community. This program is brought to you by the National Iranian-American Council, otherwise known as NIAC. I'm Novair Elmi, and I'll be your host. I'm here today with Bijan Khojepour, an Iranian economist and business consultant who was falsely accused of taking part in the protests directly following the 2009 elections in Iran. He was imprisoned in Evin prison for 3 months. However, after much international pressure and protest, Bijan was released. Bijan is the chairman and co-founder of Atiya Group, a group of strategic consulting firms that work with leading multinational companies in Iran. Bijan was able to join us via telephone from Vienna to discuss the economic and political implications of tougher sanctions on Iran. Bijan, thank you so much for being with us today.
Great. No, it's great to be with you.
So, given the alleged Iranian plot to assassinate the Saudi ambassador in Washington, what are your thoughts on the increased push for sanctions on the Central Bank of Iran?
Well, I've always found sanctions counterproductive, and I think it's sad to see that any event and any pretext is immediately used by the U.S. government to increase sanctions and pressure on Iran. I think realistically, at some point, Tehran and Washington will have to find a way to sit at a negotiating table and to address their grievances and their issues through dialogue. And if you believe in that dialogue, hopefully sometime in the future, then additional sanctions and additional pressure can only be translated into trying to increase your own bargaining power for the time when the dialogue and the negotiating starts. And that can only mean that you are basically delaying the possibility of a dialogue, because essentially when you increase your own bargaining power, you are either giving no incentive to the other side to come to the negotiating table, or you are just compelling the other side to go and look for some new instrument to increase its own bargaining position. So I am essentially against sanctions. I'm for dialogue. And it's sad to see that this spiral has moved in a direction that there is more and more sanctions, basically, and more pressure. Now, this specific call for sanctions on the Central Bank of Iran, in my view, that will be just another block, another element in a failed policy that has not achieved its stated goal, which is getting Iran to amend or denounce its nuclear program or suspend its enrichment program. And when you look at it this way, it's sad to see that we are just moving farther and farther away from a negotiated settlement. And as far as Iran is concerned, they will always find ways to circumvent sanctions. We should never forget that Iran has been under sanctions for more than 3 decades. And this is a reality that the U.S. government and other governments will have to come to terms with.
Can we talk a little bit about the economic effects on the U.S., Iran, and globally of pursuing oil and gas sanctions or an oil embargo?
Well, the costs to the Iranian side are very clear. I mean, especially the very harsh sanctions on the oil and gas industry in terms of no investment, no technology, depriving Iran of any type of technology, especially dual-use technologies, that has had a direct impact on the performance on the Iranian petroleum sector. Essentially, Iran has been deprived of the latest technology in its oil and gas sector. The cost of this sanction is very high for Iran, because essentially Iran has a very sizable hydrocarbon reserve. Essentially, if you put oil and gas together, Iran has the largest hydrocarbon reserves in the world. And that means that it can't really develop its premium economic asset. It is obviously developing it at a lower grade of technology, at a probably medium technology as opposed to top Western technology it could have had. It is developing it, but obviously the oil and gas production in Iran is below its potential. Now, that is obviously a cost and a disadvantage to the Iranian side. But at the same time, it's also a cost and disadvantage to the global economy, including the U.S. I mean, obviously, when you put pressure on the Iranian petroleum sector and you keep the Iranian oil and gas production levels lower than its actual potential, then you're taking away oil and gas production from the world market. And right. That means that that basically you're increasing the cost of oil and gas, especially in the current financial downturn that we are facing. There is also an important factor that we should take into account, and that's basically the impact of the current tensions and these sanctions on the international oil price. I mean, there is definitely a psychological impact. The psychological impact of Iran-US tensions has had a negative impact on the entire region, which is obviously oil and gas producing countries. The Persian Gulf, as you know, is the main hub of oil and gas production, especially oil production in the world. And then there is an actual impact on the Iranian production, which then translates into increased oil price for the global market. So there are negative impacts on Iran. There are negative impacts on the U.S. economy, though that may be negligible. But there are also negative impacts on the oil price, which is an important factor, especially considering the current financial crisis.
So it's very clear, Bijan, what your opinion on the sanctions are. But if we were to say who are the winners and who are the losers when it comes to sanctions on Iran, is there a way that you can put people in these two categories?
Well, it's definitely difficult to quantify all the impacts. But essentially, the key losers, in my view, are private sector players, smaller players across the world. I mean, the obviously, Iranian private sector players and smaller companies, they are, you know, being undermined by these sanctions. There are a lot of obstacles to doing business internationally, from banking sanctions to, you know, export controls to all the different issues that emerge from these sanctions. The main winners, in my view, are people who operate in shady business environments, whether they are people who are active in smuggling goods across the world, especially into and out of Iran, whether they are people who are engaged in, you know, very opaque banking relations, because obviously, as I told you, these banking sanctions mean that some transactions have to go through multiple banking chains, and that creates obviously shady interests for a lot of people. The other winners are obviously those countries who are filling the gap in Iran. I mean, we know that in the absence of Western companies and Western technology, a lot of second and third tier technology providers and countries like Chinese companies, Indian companies, Russian, Asian companies who are filling the gap, those companies are winning. And as I said, the potential technology providers from the Western countries are losing out because, as I told you, don't forget Iran's oil and gas potential, especially its gas potential. We all know, for example, for the EU in the longer run, Iran is definitely a potential supplier of gas and energy. And right now, a lot of EU companies who would like to be in Iran, who would like to develop Iranian gas resources for the future European market, are basically deprived from this market. Instead, gas is moving, or gas and petroleum projects are moving in the direction of Eastern providers and obviously also Eastern market.
Right. It's interesting. I was involved in a conversation a few days ago talking about this very subject, and they had said that, you know, materials and products are still coming into Iran, but as you said, in a shady manner, and that oftentimes those who are able to bring them in are the Revolutionary Guards of Iran. They'll have them come via Dubai or neighboring countries. So it's just, it was an interesting take to hear that those who they were trying to punish are oftentimes those who are reaping the benefits.
That could be, yeah, that could be. I mean, obviously for the revolutionary guards of Iran, this whole notion of, providing for the Iranian economy and for the Iranian industry has become a strategic issue. But as you say, a lot of companies around those networks are benefiting from the current situation.
Right. So turning a little bit to talking about policy, U.S. policy towards Iran has often focused on punitive measures and increased pressure. What are some incentives the U.S. can offer that might change Iran's decision-making and diffuse the current crisis? And for its part, what can Iran do to de-escalate the tensions?
I think the two sides are in desperate need of confidence-building measures. What I describe as the spiral of sanctions and punitive measures, in my view, this is a vicious cycle that won't generate any constructive results. So when you look at the Iranian perspective, when you sit in Tehran and look at some sort of U.S. policy over the past few decades, the perception is no matter what Iran does, Washington is always going to penalize Iran and put pressure on Iran. So the first step in terms of confidence building from Washington has to be a message to Iran, or actually not just a message, also some sort of action, communicate to Iran that the U.S. is not against Iran's technological and economic development. You may remember when I was in Washington, I used this as an example. I said, why can't Western countries put together a delegation on renewable energies and send such a delegation to Iran with a clear message that we are prepared to send the latest technology, to provide the latest technology to Iran in renewable energies? That can actually, an action like that could change perceptions in Iran, put an end to the argument in Iran that the U.S. will always penalize us, that the U.S. will never allow Iran to develop and to, have the latest technology. So the U.S., on the U.S. side, there has to be a creative act that communicates to Iran that the U.S. is not against Iran's development. It's only concerned about certain areas such as nuclear development, regional activities, and so on. So the perception has to change, and that can only change through very major confidence-building measures. I mean, small messages here and there are not going to change the perception. It has to be a clear act of, as I said, providing something that can change the dynamics in Iran. On the Iranian side, I mean, the second part of your question, mm-hmm. In my view, Iran has to try to get rid of its current paranoia and its current conspiracy mind. It's a very deep conspiracy mind right now, which in my view is very unproductive. So anything that happens, basically anything that has to do with the West within the current Iranian mindset is a conspiracy. And there is always a hidden agenda. And that means that nothing constructive can happen. Even the operation of the Western media, operation of international NGOs and Western NGOs are limited in Iran because the Iranian regime believes this is all a conspiracy. So the Iranian side, while thinking about confidence-building measures and also being receptive of potential confidence-building measures from the U.S. side, has to control this conspiracy mind, which is, it's a deep cultural trait that we have as Iranians. It's a very old fact in Iran. But right now, it's really reached the climax and everything. I mean, even contacts, simple contacts with the media, with diplomats and so on, is seen as an act of espionage and as an act of, treason against Iran. And that is obviously very unproductive. It shuts the door on potential developments and potential constructive ideas. So both sides have to do something internally, but also come up with confidence-building measures. And in my view, that's the only way. I mean, confrontation and continued pressure and continued antagonism is not going to produce any results for anyone.
Well, we're almost running out of time, but I have one last question for you. When we talk about Iran, oftentimes the phrase human rights comes to mind because, you know, unfortunately there have been a lot of human rights abuses committed in Iran, and there's currently the rapporteur that has been assigned to Iran to kind of monitor that process. But what is the best way to address human rights abuses in Iran without unwittingly aiding those who are pushing for increased sanctions against Iran?
I think addressing human rights issues can only be productive if the U.S. government, and for that fact, any government, does not single out Iran in the region. The problem is that in many cases, we just single out Iran or maybe just a few governments rather than addressing human rights issues in the entire region. I mean, all the countries in our region have problems, have issues. But as long as the U.S. government comes and singles out Iran without talking about all the other human rights issues that are happening in our region or taking place in our region, then it is very easy to break the U.S. effort and to say this is just anti-Iran propaganda rather than a genuine concern about human rights. In my view, the U.S. side or all the Western governments need to sort of regain credibility and show that they are impartial. As long as the U.S. government is silent, for example, on Bahrain, what's happening in Bahrain, it's just unproductive to talk about human rights issues in Iran. So my advice is develop a regional agenda on human rights issues, come up with a regional discourse and address all the governments. And in that sense, you can definitely also achieve results in Iran. Then for Iran, it's also important to be a respected member of the international community. But as long as it's seen within a bilateral confrontation between the U.S. and Iran, it will only be used for political and propaganda purposes and not for the real development of human rights in Iran.
Great. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time, but thank you so much for being with us today.
Pleasure. Thank you. It was great to talk to you, and good luck with all your efforts.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Be sure to visit NIAC online at www.niacouncil.org for more information.